I'm glad to have you here, Tom. And Tom, forgive me, but I just didn't want a chance pronouncing your last name. You want to help me?
You bet. It is Tom Wittenschlager. Those German
Okay.
names are always very difficult. So, but if you can say Schwarzenegger, I think you can say Wittenschlager.
Well, we don't have trouble saying Schwarzenegger. He has trouble saying California, but Tom, we're glad to have you here today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, we are delighted to be here. Thank you,
Tell the
Doug.
audience a little bit about your path to Rapture Networks.
Well, Rapture Networks is a late-stage startup. We're now entering our sixth year, so this is probably one of the longer startups in technology history. But fundamentally, what we're doing is we believe we're defining what the next generation of internet architecture and the next generation of network and large-scale systems will look like. And in a word, what the company has innovated and the patents we hold and the products we're building are a hybrid between a networking product, a computing product, a storage product, and a smart caching product. And so nowadays, when you build a large system, you have to buy a bunch of gear out that's strictly computing gear. You have to buy other gear that's strictly networking gear. You have to buy completely different gear that's security gear. And you have to buy completely different gear that's storage gear. And none of them work terribly well together because they weren't designed to work together. So what we have innovated is basically taking all four of those categories and stacking them together. And we're a first mover in it. We hold multiple patents in distributed hybrid fabrics, and we're very proud to be here, a California company.
Hey, that's fascinating, and I even understood it a little bit. Very good explanation. Thank you. But hey, I
You're
don't want you to
welcome.
get off the hook here. You have a fascinating background personally. Tell our audience a little bit about what you did before this.
Oh, well, I started out, I'm a Naval Academy graduate, electrical engineer, served in nuclear attack submarines in the Pacific, and then when I left the submarine force, I joined the original Hughes Aircraft Company and spent 16 years there in a whole bunch of businesses, everything from the torpedo business to the displays business to the satellite business. And got into the role of doing high yield technology turnarounds, and did that for a decade before I got here to Raptor, which is the very best of the best of in terms of a technology opportunity I've had in my career, which is really saying a whole lot coming from the Hughes Aircraft Company.
It is. It is. And it's saying a whole lot to look at that, impressive resume of different kinds of technology. I mean, is there a single tie-in with all the technologies that you've dealt with in your career? I mean, it doesn't seem obvious to me, but.
Well, Doug, that is a heck of a good question, and it's the first time I've ever been asked that question. The answer is actually yes, for the most curious reason, and that is that, both myself and my team here at Raptor, we're not networking people, even though we're in the networking business. We're not networking people, and we're not appliance people or component people. We're all large scale systems guys. And so, if I look back at my career and say at a time when I was running the air traffic control division of Hughes Aircraft Company, those are large scale systems, and so we would buy computing products and buy networking products and buy application software and tear out our hair trying to make it all work together. And so when I came to Raptor, and Raptor when I first got here was nothing but a distributed architecture network products company. I brought in, a few members of my old team at Hughes, and we looked at this not as a network product, but as a systems product. And the minute you take off your appliance hat and put on a large scale systems hat, you see things that the appliance guys don't see. And so what we deduced was the real problem with large scale systems is that they're constructed from components that were never really designed to work together. So we said, look, if we're in the glue piece or the plumbing piece of these large scale systems, why don't we make the network integrate seamlessly with all these other appliances by embedding the appliances in the network itself? And of course, once we went about doing that and we invested, $42 million learning how to do that and discovered that, in fact, this is perhaps the breakthrough architecture that folks have been looking for. And that's how it came to pass. So your question was really quite insightful.
Well, thank you. And as somebody who just personally has bought many different computer parts, none of which work right when you put them together, I can certainly relate to the concept of integrating these things so that from the get-go they're designed to work together. But that seems almost opposite of what most companies are doing today in terms of taking larger systems and breaking it down into smaller components so that they can farm it offshore or put it into some specialty group. It seems almost counter to what generally is going on today.
Well, it is counter. And the reason it's counter is that, us guys at Raptor don't get up every morning, look in the mirror and say, today I aspire to be average, or today I aspire to do what everybody else is doing. Because if what everyone else is doing were appropriate technologically, we wouldn't have these massive systems problems we have. We wouldn't have these massive vulnerabilities we have, and we wouldn't have the cyber warfare and cybersecurity challenge we face, you see. But really what is happening out there is that folks have optimized inside their own little sandbox. And they've competed inside of their own little sandbox. And those sandboxes are either computing and server products, storage products, network products, security products. But you see, once you've competed in that sandbox and you've run out of competitive space, all you can do is find other ways to get your price down. And of course, the real, in our view at least, the real cowardly way to do that is to just ship all this stuff offshore and get your labor hours down and end up with a cheaper product. Well, we don't believe in that. Our view is this. You cannot offshore innovation. You cannot offshore critical thinking. You cannot offshore your personal responsibilities as a senior manager in a technology company. So we do exactly the opposite. We build everything right here in Orange County. We design everything here in Orange County. We've written all our patents in Orange County. And despite not offshoring anything, our product is half the price of our next nearest competitor and dramatically higher in performance. So we're very, very proud of the fact that we have thought our way through this problem in a way that renders us competitive without having to resort to the easy fix of offshoring.
What a great answer. I have great respect for what you're doing. Sort of follows what the salmon do. They always swim upstream and get stronger because of it. So,
absolutely.
Tom, with your varied experience, one of the questions I like to ask all our guests is, what sort of guiding principle or business lesson have you learned that really has served you well in all of the different businesses you've been involved in?
Well, I think the biggest one is that luck comes to those that work their butts off. And there is, this idea that you can go to some magic school and get some magic piece of paper and suddenly achieve great things is just absolute folly. I mean, in our experience, all of the innovation and thinking and so-called breakthrough technology has come from nothing short of just pure unadulterated hard work. Now, the other real thing, I think, from a lessons learned perspective is that there is absolutely no substitute for innovation. And the moment that you're no longer able to really innovate, the moment that you can't think critically about every aspect of the technology, of the world you're in, of the problem you're trying to solve, that's the point at which you fall off the edge of the earth competitively. And so really it's a combination of complete and ruthless innovation on a daily basis tied to an unyielding work ethic. And if you put those two things together, you're just flat going to succeed. Or as some people say, you'll get lucky.
Okay. And I think I know how you're going to answer this, but I'll ask it anyhow. And are you confining the need for innovation to just product innovation, or are you talking also about the very basics of how you do business and interact with people in your company?
Well, you know, very clearly, as Doug, you know infinitely better than I, that innovation, the dimensions of innovation are boundless. And on the business side, they are every bit as relevant. From a survivability perspective, they may be even more relevant on the business side than they are on the technology side. You know, for example, when you're in the network switching business and in the high performance transport business, you're kind of an early indicator for what's happening in the economy. And we saw this downturn coming a couple of years ago, and we were in a different facility in Santa Ana, a much larger one and a much nicer one. When we saw the downturn coming, we decided at that point that we were going to very quickly, ahead of the curve, get our costs down. And so we moved facilities, we pared down our staff, we literally cut our costs by more than 60%. And as a result, we've been able to ride this thing out, and I'm very proud to say we've outlasted much larger competitors, like Nortel, for example, that didn't do the same and folded.
And how is that attitude going to serve you when things, you know, quote, turn around? You're going to go back to the way they were, or have you found sort of permanent ways of looking at things that will change your business model even in a better economy?
Well, you know, Doug, once you've gone on a diet and you look in the mirror and you like the way it looks, you're probably not going to go back to eating hamburgers, right? And much is the same case for us. Now that we've really cut our costs and our culture, we've created a culture within the company that it is really cool. It's cool not to waste money. It's cool to be cheap. In fact, you know, we compete with one another to see who can get the cheapest plane ticket, who can get the cheapest rental car, who can. When you start creating a culture like that, the unintended consequence is you're going to be saving money for a very, very long time. And that's, in that sense, you're very, very insightful in pointing out that this downturn has actually been, in some ways, a real help to our competitiveness.
I think you're right. I think it is, as long as we don't forget everything we've learned here and go back to getting sloppy. You know, you made a statement. I think you've made it to my partner Rick, and I wanted to ask you about it. You said something about until you build stuff, you don't really learn the lessons that are needed to build a successful product.
That's right. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we've worked with a lot of people. Obviously, we're at the very tip of the spear of high tech. I mean, The world we live in is extremely competitive, extremely tumultuous, and very, very demanding. And not only are we innovating new architectures for networks, but we're building those products. And what I meant to say was that until you build a product, you really don't understand the space you're in. Because what happens is, it's one thing to architect things, it's something else to do view graphs, it's something else yet to do modeling and simulation. When you're putting components on circuit boards, shooting them through wave solder machines, conformally coding them, bringing them out, testing them, integrating them, putting on software, and discovering that something you hadn't accounted for is preventing that product from living up to its potential, you know, that's where the gray hair comes from. And until you have those experiences, I think I think you really are a participant, but not a player. And once you have those experiences, you've kind of the learning that comes from them is profound, just absolutely profound.
Okay. You know, tell us a little bit about some unresolved challenge that you're currently facing in the business. I'm sure you've got more than one, but what is one of the big challenges that you're dealing with today?
Well, Doug, the biggest challenge we're dealing with is that we're a small player and a relatively unknown player in a space dominated by the largest technology company in the world, and that company is Cisco. And so we have an extraordinarily innovative product. It is technically better. Its performance dramatically better. Its price dramatically lower. But you have this juggernaut called Cisco, a behemoth in the marketplace, and it's a name that everybody knows. It's a name that IT guys are very, very comfortable with, and it is a real, real challenge to overcome the inertia of a company that has, you know, double-digit billions sitting on its balance sheet in cash. That's a tough business challenge, is dealing with a competitor that is so ubiquitous and so large, notwithstanding the fact that their products are perfectly, perfectly good, but they're not great, and ours are superb.
So who is your typical client for your product? Who are you selling to, Tom?
Well, generally, you know, when you're in the high-performance networking business, and in our case, in the high-performance networking business and hybrid fabric systems business, your customers tend to fall into two camps. One camp are the truly, truly innovative technologists who want the coolest, latest stuff and aren't bothered by the fact that it comes from a smaller company. The second group of customers that we've seen tend to be people that need high-performance networking but can't afford to belly up to the Cisco bar and pay the kind of price they pay. So the kind of people that you see that have needs for that level of network performance include hospitals that are going all digital with all digital imaging. Obviously, the Department of Defense, who's one of our largest customer, again, for the same reason, they stress their networks. They send a lot of different data types. They're very challenging and very difficult. We have customers in the energy generation business. We have customers in the energy distribution business. We have customers in the cable space in the next to last mile distribution tier. So that's kind of a quick sampling of the kind of folks that are our current customers for our high-performance fabric networking systems.
So it sounds like the profile of your customers in many ways sort of emulates the profile of Cisco, your big competitor.
It does. It does. And you know, it's one of those really fascinating things where the people that we're successful with in terms of our commercial sales tend to be I would call them the mavericks. You know, the mavericks who look at Cisco and say, you know what, Cisco's a safe choice, but I want the really, really high performance stuff. And so I'm willing to take the cool choice or the innovative choice. And the number of people that fall into that kind of category, people that are willing to take that kind of a risk to get something that's markedly better, is probably one in a thousand.
Okay. That's a challenge.
Yeah, it's a challenge, but heck, if it was easy, Cisco would be doing it.
I love the response. Well, you know, obviously, innovation is really key to what you're doing. How do you keep that energy and focus going in, as you said, a 6-year startup?
Well, the the real way you keep it going is you know, people get fired up about inventing new things, and people get fired up about innovating in an area where no one has tried something of this ilk before. And it just feeds on itself, you know. I mean, today when you look at our patent portfolio, you know, we hold the patent on distributed fabric Ethernet switching. We also hold the patent on a fabric as a communication channel, a fabric as a distributed or mesh computer, a fabric as a what I would call a migrating management system that makes it much more difficult for these cyber warfare folks to bring down our systems. So look, when you're innovating at that level and you're using a genuinely new architecture to do what's never ever been done before, I'll tell you, it fires you up, and it gets the team jazzed, and that excitement alone is what it takes. Now, when you see, I would suspect you'd find, Doug, that when you find a company that doesn't have that energy, you'll also find a company that isn't innovating very much.
I think you're absolutely right. I think innovative sort of creates its own tidal wave that carries us along and sustains us during the difficult times.
It does.
Yeah. Tom, as we kind of wrap up here, is there anything else that you want to say about your firm or talk about that I haven't asked you about here today?
Well, obviously, our website is www.raptor-networks.com. We're publicly traded under the symbol RPTN. But, you know, to those people that are curious about what hybrid fabrics are and are curious about how is it that you can get 1,000 times performance for half the price, you know, that those are the kind of folks that we'd like to have another conversation with if they found this at all thought-provoking.
Well, I can tell you I found it thought-provoking, and I want to applaud you for your thoughtful answers to questions that we didn't talk about beforehand. I didn't mean to throw you a curve, but you got me so involved I couldn't stick to the script here.
If there was a script,
so, Tom,
somebody forgot to send it
with
to me.
Us today, and we look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Doug, thank you very much. It was a pleasure, very much a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's a fascinating discussion. Innovation, I mean, how can you beat a more exciting topic than that? Speaking of exciting, I just want to tell you that the list of exciting guests that we're going to have on the show here continues to grow. It's hard to top them, but every week we seem to bring more exciting people. My partner Rick Franzi is going to be finishing out the week tomorrow. He's really going to be talking to some very interesting guests. Christopher Quinley of DeMoore and Associates, talking about financial planning strategies. Yeah, I think we might be a little bit interested in that right now. And Dale Congaleri of Crenshaw Tool and Die, fascinating company today about what's going on in the U.S. manufacturing footprint. Thursday, he's going to talk to Joe Pecci of Anaheim Precision Manufacturing, and later Jerry Schlosser, who's going to be talking about his latest book, The Culture of Excess. I'd like a little bit of that myself, a little excess. So this is Doug Gefeller, your host for today on Critical Mass, the radio show, wishing you better decision-making and thanking you for listening to us here on octalkradio.net.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, only on octalkradio.net. We'll be right back.